This is Juvie, a podcast that explores cases, legislation, experiences, and ramifications of children and youth in juvenile and adult criminal justice systems.
I'm still a little frustrated with the process. I'm not even scheduled for a status meeting. Why not schedule me? I got my own attorney. I got my own mitigation specialist. I'm ready to go. My sentence got vacated 8 months ago. Been here for all this time. I should have never been here to begin with. It's kind of hard to be patient.
Just before Thanksgiving, we recorded two early morning phone conversations with our featured juvenile lifer, Giovanni Reed. One on Tuesday the 22nd, 2 days after his 42nd birthday, and one on Wednesday the 23rd. Just after the first conversation, something quite significant happened. So when we picked up with Giovanni again the following morning, his mood was quite different. In this episode, you'll hear the greater part of both conversations, and in them, Giovanni tells us a lot about the kinds of procedures now getting in motion across America as states begin to work through the hundreds of long-standing cases of juvenile lifers whose sentences need to be reviewed in the light of January's Montgomery v. Louisiana ruling, making retroactive the unconstitutionality of automatic life without parole sentences for juveniles. He also has a very busy daily schedule right now by the sound of things, which is why we had to talk before 8 o'clock in the morning. The sound quality isn't always great. Giovanni doesn't have the possibility of making Skype calls, and you'll hear each conversation interrupted now and again by a recorded prison announcement, as well as some extraneous background noises, and conversation getting cut off automatically after a certain period, necessitating Giovanni calling back again immediately to pick up where we left off. Well, hello.
Hey, Zoe, how you doing?
How are you?
I'm hanging in there.
Happy birthday, belatedly. Happy birthday for Sunday.
Oh, it was all right. I mean, you know.
Did your sister come?
Yeah, she came up. Nah, she came up too.
So, this is the first birthday that you have reason to really kind of maybe celebrate a little bit.
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, I'm still a little frustrated with the process.
For nearly 10 years, Giovanni has been embroiled in a round of evidentiary hearings and appeals around his innocence claim and his juvenile status with regard to the sentence he was given nearly 24 years ago. So when the Supreme Court ruling Montgomery v. Louisiana came down in January, he was already contesting his sentence. And indeed, his original life without parole sentence was vacated a couple of months later, on April 1st of this year. Giovanni's been waiting 7 or 8 months since that time for his own Montgomery resentencing hearing. Didn't the judge order that you were supposed to get something by yesterday, actually?
All right, so, yeah, they said that my federal judge had reopened the case and wanted the district attorney's office to respond and explain to them why my sentence should be vacated and why I shouldn't be sentenced. So what they want to do, because my sentence has already been vacated by the state courts, they're going to file a motion. I would assume they already filed it and ask for the courts to dismiss my case from the federal court because the claim is moot because I've already gotten a relief from the state courts. So I wrote to the attorney that was handling the case and I told her to me the claim wasn't moot because it's been like 7 or 8 months and I still haven't had a court date yet. I'm not even scheduled for a status date. So I was asking her, could she file something to the judge and ask him now, could he issue an order for the state court to schedule me for court? So we'll see. I'm going to try to get in contact with that attorney today. And I'm going to try to reach my state attorney and see what they want to know, see what the situation is.
Now, when you say I don't even have a status hearing, what exactly is that?
So the status hearing,
Pennsylvania State Correctional Institution, Greater Bird, this call is subject to recording and monitoring.
The status hearing is basically to have the courts go over what the status of the case is and go over what the status of the case is so we can determine when my actual sentencing date will be, or to determine whether or not effective agreement can be reached where we don't have to proceed to an actual resentencing hearing. But I can't get to either one of those without the status.
The last I heard, you had got a letter from your attorney about a month ago
What exactly was it that was supposed to be done by yesterday? The judge had ordered that you were supposed to have something by the 21st.
Yeah, it was just the order for the DA to respond to my case in federal court. He had until the 21st, which was yesterday, so I would imagine that they filed. And I won't know that until possibly later on in the day or maybe tomorrow.
So in the meantime, have any of your co-prisoners got dates? Has anybody else been given a date that you know of?
A lot of people are signing off on agreements to see the parole board. There's tons of them. It's practically everybody on my block, the block that I'm housed on. So a lot of those guys are either gotten their new sentence or they're at court in another county getting their new sentence. The problem with Philadelphia, the county where I'm at, is the sheer number of
Pennsylvania State Correctional Institution, Greater Bird. This call is subject to recording and monitoring.
There was about 300 cases.
Yeah.
On top of that, not only do they have the 300 cases to deal with us, then there's a whole another set of cases, which totals way more than 300 in a 400 or 500 area range, where they got to reopen cases dealing with drug cases because of corrupt cops and stuff like that.
Giovanni's referring to the review of hundreds of drug conviction cases that are currently clogging up the courts because of alleged corruption on the part of 7 Philadelphia police narcotics officers.
There's a lot of people cases who originated from outside of Philadelphia, but there's also a lot of people within Philadelphia who's already been sentenced. The older cases, like people that got 30 years, 35, right. 40. There was a guy yesterday, Monday. This guy up here named, they call him Red Dog, or Red. He got 50 years and he just got a new sentence yesterday.
How old is he?
Red's got to be, I was a man, he got like 50 years and he was about 16 or 17, so he's got to be in his late 60s.
Haywood Fennell, or Red Dog, as he's been known during 48 years in prison, was involved in a robbery, beating and stabbing in North Philadelphia when he was 17. Now 66, he's learned and employed skills as a carpenter, plumber and car mechanic while in prison, and is credited with having saved the life of a prison corrections officer who was attacked by other prisoners during an attempted escape in the 1970s. He's one of the juvenile lifers who's, as Giovanni puts it, signed off on an agreement to go before the parole board after receiving a new sentence of 35 years to life, a type of arguably arbitrary resentencing that has aroused accusations of excess by a Pennsylvania federal court judge who's indicated that such sentences don't conform to the spirit of Montgomery, proportionate and individualized sentencing. A month ago, the country's and the world's oldest juvenile lifer, 79-year-old Joe Legion, who is also at Greaterford Prison, rejected an offer of 50 years to life. He's already served 63 years, which would have put him on parole for the rest of his life after release. So he's chosen to stay put for now.
The people you're seeing getting hearings, do they tend to be older than you and people who've been incarcerated for longer?
They got cases that are scheduled that had the way after my case. So it's like really no method to what they're doing. They for the most part they wanted to deal with the older cases, which seems to be the case, but
right.
There are also cases that are in there that are scheduled for court that happened after my case. And I think that was one of my big complaints was that you got a case scheduled, like why not schedule me? I got my own attorney, I got my own mitigation specialist, and we're ready to go. My sentence got vacated 8 months ago. I should have, at the very least, had a status set.
What is it you think that's holding yours up as opposed to other people's?
I don't know. I mean, like, there's no... I had people talk to people. They saying that they have a list that comes from the DA's office that is then transferred to the clerk of court. I mean, a clerk that's in charge of scheduling these cases. So once he gets the list from the district attorney's office, then he goes in and schedules the cases. But to me, that seems a little odd. For the district attorney's office to be in control of who goes to court and when they go to court. That's a court function to me. And they charge that responsibility, not the DA, but it appears that a lot of the rules of court are being suspended in these situations because of the numbers. Like, they're not even following the basic court rules. Like, I got a right to a procedural due process. Like, my case is supposed to be processed in a timely fashion. And so far, it hasn't been.
What does your lawyer think might be holding it up?
I don't know. I mean, he just came to see me. He was, you know, basically trying to talk me off the edge. And that's the trust to me, to be patient. Just be patient with it, but, you know, sitting here for all this time.
Right.
Against the backdrop of me feeling like I should have never been here to begin with.
Right.
It's kind of hard to be patient under those kind of circumstances.
Huh, yeah, that's not... What are you doing to pass the time right now?
Taking classes on electricity, plumbing, HVAC, taking a lot of different re-entry classes. Like this morning, a couple students from University of Tennessee coming up, they've been working on like re-entry issues with us. So I'm going to go there this morning, and I'm going to stay there all morning from like 9 o'clock or early 8 o'clock all the way to 11 o'clock. This is the last class for this, so this would be basically like a goodbye session.
What kind of things have you been learning in those re-entry classes?
Oh, well, they talk about things like the importance of banking, credit union, transportation, the different technology, how to get around the city, things you can get involved in, different programs. You know, they cover a lot of different areas. The importance of a resume, the importance of writing thank you letters to potential employers, thanking them for any potential interview that you can get from them. They speak about a host of things like the benefits you may have by going to a halfway house, transitioning over to your family, the family environment. Everything that's really got to do with reentry. The lady that comes up with the student, her name is Dr. Kathleen Brown. She's in charge of like the nursing school at University of Tennessee. She helps people with preparing their accommodation packages to be presented to the governor to see if they can get their sentence commuted. She works with a lot of different people that are serving long sentences and stuff like that. So she has somewhat of a background and dealing with these kind of situations. But this is kind of like a really new area for everybody. This juvenile life or thing is kind of like a whole other set of issues that everybody's still trying to wrap their mind around, preparing for people to get out of prison.
Do they talk about health benefits?
Yeah, they talk about, like, you know, different Medicaid. They talk about that, how important it is to have that in place, the different places you go for resources and things. So, I mean, they talk about it, all of that. So what they're doing is they're actually putting a package together, and at the end of the session, once they complete it, they want to make sure that everybody will participate in this, you know, helping them put the package together, will receive a copy of it. They'll give us websites, different things.
I came across a website the other day about...
You have 1 minute left.
Oh, no.
Go ahead. Say it again.
I was going to say, I came across a website recently. It was an organization that helps formerly incarcerated get work. I'll have to track it down again.
It's
one that's specifically oriented towards helping formerly incarcerated. So you say you're doing some training for plumbing, electrician, HVAC, you said?
Yeah, well, besides all the many years I spent studying the law, this is one of the other things that I'm more proficient in that, it seems, because I've been doing it for so long. But I found electricity to be really interesting. When I went in there, I never thought that I would be interested in it, but it fascinates.
That's good.
That stuff
yeah.
Thank you for using Securus. Goodbye.
Good morning.
How you doing, Rose?
So, I hear something has happened.
Yeah. It's funny, right? Because part of the conversation yesterday, right from the beginning, was my frustrations about not having this court date. And then, lo and behold, they gave me the court date yesterday.
Yep. Can you explain exactly what that means for you?
Okay. All right. So what they did was they put my case in motion, essentially. By them scheduling for a status hearing is basically to start the process towards my resentencing. So what will happen on December the 9th is that they'll go in, the attorneys will go in, the DA will be there, the judge will be there, and everybody will be there. They will go over some of the particulars about what's going on about my case, stuff like that, just to bring everybody on the same page. So this initial hearing is to make sure everybody is on the same page of what's needed, what the courts don't have, and, you know, stuff like that. So then they'll set up another date. At that next date, whatever they said that we should have from the first date, like they may say, all right, well, we need records. They may want my institutional records. They may want the files from the police department. So once they get those files at the next date, then at the third date, they'll make me an offer for whatever. I can either accept that offer or I can not accept it, and then they'll give me a date for my resentment.
How do they convey the offer to you?
They would convey the offer through the lawyer. So they would contact the lawyer. The lawyer would be in contact with the DA's office. And
this is a call from Pennsylvania State Correctional Institution, Greaterford.
This call is subject to recording and monitoring.
They would communicate that offer to him, and then they would send it to me in writing. And I can either sign off on it or either reject it.
Is there a time frame in which you have to decide?
Well, yeah. There's not per se, there's no time frame, but once they make the offer, you don't want it to be just like lingering in the air. You want to go ahead and say yay or nay, you know, because they'll have another date set for you to come in. Just say, for instance, at the second hearing, they make an offer for me, but then I got a court date. So they want me to say what I want to do before that next court date. So if they set the next court date, say 2 weeks later, within that 2 week period of time, they want to know whether or not I want to accept this or whether I want to go to a hearing. The bottom line is just, though, if they offer me something that causes me to have to spend one more day in prison, I'm not going to take it. And I'll be going to a resentencing hearing. That's the bottom line. So I'm not flexible on that. There's no compromise. There's nothing they can say to me. Either they offer me an agreement for time served, or we have no deal, or I'll see you in court. If they offer me anything that causes me to do one more day in prison, mm-hmm. I'm not taking it, and we'll be going to a resentencing hearing.
At that resentencing hearing, if you refuse their offer, what then happens?
Okay, so then I'm bringing all my expert witnesses. I'm bringing people to testify on my behalf, and they will go through the facts of the case as to what happened. All the stuff I've done since I've been in prison. All it really is at the resentencing hearing for me is to show why I should be released right now. So that's essentially what it's going to come down to. Because I have, you know, I got stuff on a record from the Commonwealth. There's not much they can say at a resentencing. So I think that the lawyer is going to present all of that to the DA's office so we can try to mitigate and get everything done right now. We'll see. Because they've already admitted or acknowledge that I didn't have anything to do with the actual homicides, and they already admitted that, so I don't know what else they could argue.
It seems that in its closing arguments at the evidentiary hearing held for Giovanni and adult co-defendant Carlton Bennett in 2012, the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania conceded probable innocence for Giovanni and Carlton of being accessories in the 1991 shooting for which they were convicted. The judge, however, did not agree and ruled against both defendants. Carlton, who's now incarcerated near Erie, Pennsylvania, was 20 at the time of the crime, so does not qualify for the retroactive ruling against juvenile life without parole and consequent resentencing for which Giovanni qualifies. Giovanni expects to be freed in the near future on the basis of that ruling, but unless he can then obtain exoneration for both himself and Carlton, Carlton will remain behind bars for the rest of his life.
You also have a spotless record, don't you, in prison?
Yeah. Never been in no write-ups, never been in no trouble. I've done a host of things.
So if they give you an offer that's acceptable, you still get a resentencing hearing, right?
Absolutely. So that's mandated. There's no way around that.
Mm-hmm. And you will attend that resentencing hearing?
Yes, I will be there. But now, even if I accept an agreement, they're going to bring me to court. They would do it either way. If they hold a resentencing hearing, they won't bring me to court. If I accept an agreement, they got to bring me down to court to do it formally on the record. And people could still testify on my behalf, and they still got to enter stuff on the record. There's still stuff that's going to happen, even if I accept an agreement. So I'll go to court either way.
And that would happen, presumably, within a few weeks of them making the offer?
Yeah.
Hmm.
Well, I figure the prices are, so now that I'm scheduled, we're talking about at the long haul, right? Say, not knowing the court scheduling, because you got to compensate for the court scheduling. And you don't know what that scheduling was going to look like. So, but at the end of the day, I got the court thing. Everything is in process. So you say at the very latest, I should be home by the summertime, no matter how you cut it. And that's just compensating for time.
So hopefully you'd get a resentencing hearing sometime in January or February.
It's possible. Like I said, like it's kind of hard to call it. I really have to wait and see what happens at the first status hearing to see like how everything is going to start moving. But a lot of this depends on the scheduling. You keep in mind they have a lot of cases as well. A lot of people accepting agreements. They're pulling a lot of people down from court, from other jails. So there's a lot of stuff going on. So I'm just getting in through the front door. So me just having experience knowing how these things work, you cannot predict or you cannot set a solid timetable on these things. But it's safe to say certain things. You can make certain calls around about. So I know that bands I'm scheduled in December, everything should be wrapped up reasonably before June.
Now, presumably, if you don't accept the initial offer, the resentencing hearing date would take a little longer to set up because there'd be more to organize.
If I go to a resentencing hearing, it wouldn't be just like a simple hearing. For me, it probably would be because I don't have a crazy set of facts or a lot of things that they're claiming I did. The only contention in my case is whether or not I played a part in a robbery that led to somebody's death.
Despite Giovanni's claim of innocence and contention that he should never have been in prison in the first place, he is nevertheless subjective about the benefits of a short period of parole on being released after such a long time in prison, both for the public and for former prisoners themselves.
Is there a maximum of parole that you would be willing to accept?
Well, yeah. Well, I know how they've been doing it in Philadelphia County. They've been giving everybody lifetime on parole, but I've been looking at what they've been doing around a lot.
You have 1 minute left.
In different counties, they haven't been doing that. Like a guy, I don't know who he is, but he just got sentenced to 13 years as a minimum, to 26 years as a maximum, and he got 24 years in. Now, my overall contention was that I didn't have anything to do with this. I mean, I can't get the time back. I'm going to always continue to fight my innocence, even whether I'm here or whether I'm there. Certainly, it would enhance my ability to fight on that front if I was home. So, but in terms of what I would accept, I mean, what I would like is something like a 13 or 26 or 12 and a half or 25, but then I would set some years of probation to make people feel comfortable about the decision. They could monitor the situation. That's the ideal situation, but we'll see. But I don't know if I'm going to like
Thank you for using Securus. Goodbye.
Hello.
Yes, I'm here.
You were saying about parole and how it would be ideal to get something that would be a short period of parole because it would also make the system feel more confident about keeping tabs on you.
I know there's a big concern for a lot of people, even of course, because you never know. This is a very unique situation where you're confronted with the prospects of having people on the street that haven't been on the street for 50, 40, 30 years. So people that's been essentially in prison since they were children. So that's a hell of a transition. And you're talking about, these are things that they never anticipated that they would be confronted with or a situation. If it was up to Pennsylvania, they would have never did it. So
we hope to talk to an important Pennsylvania corrections official about these issues in an upcoming interview, so keep your ears peeled for that.
I realize, after seeing the process and all the things that's attached to it, there is a public safety issue, and I do understand that. But they want people to get out. They want people to be able to go on and live productive lives. So how do you guarantee?
This is a call from
Pennsylvania State Correctional Institution, Graterford.
This call is subject to recording and monitoring.
You really can't, right? You can't guarantee that everybody's going to go on and do it. But when you don't know these individuals on a personal basis, I've been around a lot of these guys, and I can tell you that I can't see nobody really doing anything that's going to get themselves back into a situation like this. I have to spend this kind of time in prison thinking that they would never have this opportunity again. One of the things that I've been hearing a lot was that a lot of the guys that they're taking down to court are actually crying in the courtroom because, aside from it being an emotional thing, the court beginning to recognize some of the things that these guys have done over the years in terms of their aspiration to become better people. And for the court to sit there and tell you that they recognize that, I believe you deserve another chance at life. These guys are breaking down. So it's something to be noticed when you look at that. So the chances that these guys will do something stupid is slim to none.
This is a call from Pennsylvania State Correctional Institution, Greaterford.
This call is subject to recording and monitoring.
These guys just really want to go home to their family, live out their lives. That's all they really want. So, I mean, there's no one thinking about getting out doing not crazy. And a lot of these cases happen as a result of the lack of perspective. No one is the same from 15, 16 to 40 to 50. Like, no one carries that same belief system that they had at that age all the way to 50 years old or to 40. Things change. So, there's no difference. So.
Now, there are also some advantages to you also to be on parole, at least for a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, because I know it's a public safety issue, I know because people don't know me personally, but the people that know me personally, they know exactly what I'm doing. But because they don't, people that are sitting in these positions trying to make these judgment calls, they don't know me personally, I would be willing to set some years on probation to allow them to get a chance to know me in that atmosphere or in that environment.
Also, from the perspective of services, you have more of a link to the system, which is a good support system, at least in the initial stages.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that too.
What exactly do they do for you if you're on parole?
Oh, well, see, this is the thing. So they didn't want anybody to be released straight out to society without having an attachment to the system, because one of the benefits of being on parole, particularly in this instance where talking about juvenile life, they created a lot of resources to provide people with coming from out of these situations. Because they recognize this is a special population. And they create a lot of different resources that these guys can tap into. But the only way you can tap into it is you have to be on parole in order to do it. But I don't necessarily agree that you have to be on a lifetime of parole. Mm-hmm. That's ridiculous.
So what kind of resources would you be able to tap into?
If you wanted to go to school for free, they'll set you up. You go to college, housing, get you there, help you with appointment. There's all types of programs that they got available. Whatever your interest is in terms of career path you want to take, they'll help you with that. They created a lot to assist these guys coming out the door. So they want to give everybody, basically, put people in a situation where, like, if you should fail, it's not because we didn't help, or it's not because we left you stranded. If you failed, it's just because that's what you wanted. But everything is here that's available for you. You just got to take advantage of it.
Finally, we discuss how Giovanni might put the extensive practical skills and knowledge he's gained during 25 years in prison to good use when he takes that giant step back into society in the hopefully not too distant future.
I know you're really interested in the legal side and you've done a lot of studies on law over the years. I understand you've actually helped a few prisoners prepare for hearings and things like that.
Yeah. I'm helping people with their cases and stuff.
Yeah.
That's been, a lot of my time has been dedicated to helping people, not just with these hearings and stuff like that, but just overall with their cases in general, like helping people get situated in court. Get their concerns met in terms of their issues. So, you know, I help people with their legal work all the time.
If you wanted to continue in that field in some capacity, some of the organizations, there are loads of prison reform organizations, especially in Philadelphia, or a legal aid society. I know, for example, there's a guy called David McCallum who was exonerated a couple of years ago. He's in New York. He works for a legal aid office as a support person. He's very inspired. You know, he's helping out in an office. He's surrounded by lawyers. He feels like he's doing some very valid work. You could maybe look into that, finding some kind of position.
Oh, yeah, I would absolutely love it. Yeah. I would love to do that kind of work, though. Like, I had got a visit recently. Somebody was asking me, like, you know, what kind of stuff that I want to do and what kind of work that I want to do when I came home. And I was telling him, you know, I would love to be in a law firm and continue work in that area because I'm comfortable. That area, I know that kind of work, so, I spent years and years studying it. So, of course, I would probably need some more training, but, you know, There's a lot of stuff that I do know that an average attorney may not even know because I just spent so much time around it. It became part of my interest in order to save my life. So, like, every case that I read, it mattered to me, or every right now I did on my own case is matters because it was a means to help save my life. So I put so much into it. So, but he was, I was telling him I didn't know how practical it would be for me to actually come up from a situation like this right to a law firm. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I would have to see.
Certainly worth looking into.
Yeah, I'm definitely, I would be interested in it because I think I could do some good in that area.
Have you spoken to your dad today or yesterday?
What that?
Have you spoken to your dad?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I spoke to him this morning. I talked to him about the court date and stuff like that. And
what did he say?
yeah, he's happy. He's happy about the process starting and us finally getting the ball rolling. So I'm excited about it as well. So, I mean, I think that because the downside is that because if there's any downside, not to me personally, but you know, to some of the guys around here, that I won't be able to assist people to the magnitude to which I was because of everything I got going on and everything that's in front of me right now. So I got to scale back on that workload. So I'm going to finish up a couple of things that I was doing for a couple of guys, and that's basically going to be it.
You have 1 minute left.
So I get myself situated.
Right. Now, Joe Legion, I was wondering what he's going to do, given he refused his first...
I'll look into that, and I'll let you know. And I got to run to school real quick, but I'll give you a call back. Maybe later today, I'll check on it. And Joe Legion, I can tell you this, that he denied, he don't want the deal that they offered him, so he's actually going to a resentencing hearing. I do know that much.
Right.
So, but I'll be... I'll
Thank
be
you for using Securus. Goodbye.
You've been listening to Juvie, conceived, written, and produced by Zoe Badafinic. Join us next time on Juvie.